Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Pavarotti and The Art of Self-Defense. Are they both self-explanatory? Hi, David. How are you?
Okay, Bill. How are you doing this week?
Great.
Good. Glad to hear it. Now, these movies have, this is, once again, our theme this week is that there is no theme this week. These movies have pretty much nothing in common, although I suppose that one could, you know, draw certain parallels in an odd sort of a way. I guess they're both about men who achieve success of one sort or another, but that's about it. Pavarotti is, as the title does subtly hint, a documentary about Luciano Pavarotti, the very great Italian tenor in the world of opera and even beyond opera. And this movie, the unusual thing, I think the most unusual thing, maybe the only unusual thing about it, is that it was made by Ron Howard. He started life as a child actor on television in the sitcom world, and by the way, was just one of the very, very best kid actors of his time. He was really good when he was a little boy doing acting. He just always seemed to hit the mood exactly right. And then he grew up to be an adult actor and a very major filmmaker, not a favorite filmmaker of mine. He's made some good movies, of course, and he's made some bad movies. He certainly tends to go very much in the sort of the straightforward commercial direction with not a whole lot not a lot of unpredictable moves in most of his films I have found over the years. But here he has definitely done an unpredictable move by making a documentary about a classical musician. Now, he's done music before, Ron Howard has. He made a documentary about the Beatles a few years ago, for example. But here again, he goes, plunges directly into the classical world, and he's made a very good movie. Now, I have to say, Pavarotti is a hagiography. It is the life of a saint. That's the, if it were literature, that's the category it would come in. And Pavarotti had this, of course, fabulously successful career, which we see sort of detailed in the movie that gives his background and past and all of that. But he just is the movie is just tremendously affectionate toward this this great musician who was himself apparently deserving of very great affection from those who knew him as well as from those who simply listened to him. So he had, he's sort of a rags to riches story. And in his early adulthood, Pavarotti was actually an elementary school teacher in Italy. Sort of hard to imagine him sort of taking attendance, but there he was. But of course, his father had actually been an amateur singer, and Pavarotti had, got into the world of the love of music and the world of music pretty early, and became very successful. He had a breakthrough at one point when he was called in to substitute for an ailing tenor, and was immediately then zoomed up the ladder of success and became enormously important. Now, one of the interesting things, and there are actually quite a lot of very interesting things about Pavarotti, is that it was not simply singing great roles in great operas that made him such an enormous world-class celebrity, which he did become. He did other things too. For example, and this is of course totally famous, he was for quite a while one of the three tenors, the other two were Plácido Domingo and José Carreras, who toured around and went all over the place doing concerts together. And they were just fabulous. Even if people who knew nothing about the world of classical music or opera, would be aware of the three tenors because they were enormously important. And both Domingo and Carreras make on-camera appearances as singers and also as talking heads in the documentary. And then interestingly, later in his career, Pavarotti became interested. Well, I guess maybe he had always been a little bit interested, but he got sort of brought over into the world of pop music, and he became pretty close with the U2 rock and roller Bono. And they did a bunch of things together. And some of this was like charity stuff, but some of it was just sort of like regular music. And it's so interesting in the later parts of the documentary to see Pavarotti performing with the likes of Bono and other rock and roll musicians. All very, very sort of odd and very unusual. And it's fun to see. So Pavarotti certainly did have a varied enough career, considering that what he really was sort of just a great big opera star. He did have a varied enough career to lend a certain amount of variety to the movie itself. He also late in his career, in the later part of his career, became very involved in doing charity work and did a lot of charity concerts and things like that. And that was part of what he was involved in with Bono. So there are other unusual things about the movie, too. For example, at the very beginning of the film, there's some very fascinating footage that was shot by a musician friend of Pavarotti's in Brazil in the middle of the 1990s, because Pavarotti went off on this journey down the Amazon to this opera house in the middle of nowhere. It reminded me very much of the Werner Herzog movie Fitzcarraldo, which is about a guy building an opera house in the middle of nowhere in the jungle. And Pavarotti made a sort of a pilgrimage to this opera house and had been way down the Amazon or up the Amazon because Enrico Caruso, one of his great heroes, of course, had sung there many, many years ago. And Pavarotti gets up on the stage and there at this empty theater in the middle of nowhere and sings. And, you know, it's an unusual moment. And it shows that even a great culture hero like Pavarotti had culture heroes of his own. So there's a number of other people who appear on camera in the movie, the great conductor Zubin Mehta, Lang Lang is in there, and also various associates of Pavarotti, including his first wife and his second wife and so forth. And one of the things that struck me about the movie was that, you know, we're used nowadays when we see music documentaries, they're usually about rock and roll musicians, pop musicians, things like that. And there's always sex, drugs, and rock and roll are always the big story in the thing. And my gosh, Pavarotti at one point, well along into his life, has an affair and it busts up his marriage. And this is as scandalous as the movie gets, you know. I mean, Pavarotti was, by today's standards, a very respectable as well as a very respected person. And I just, it's sort of an amusing contrast in a way with the kind of stuff that we see in the rock and roll documentaries that we nowadays generally see. But he's a wonderful singer. He died too young. He died when he was in his early 70s several years ago. And that, you know, makes a sad ending for the movie. But I just had a very good time watching Pavarotti. It's about 2 hours long, and I never really, I myself am an opera fan. I probably go to the opera on the average of once or twice a month. And so, of course, it has, you know, that sort of appeal for me, and not everybody is an opera fan nowadays. But I certainly enjoyed that aspect of it as well as others. And I just found it, it's an enjoyable movie. Pavarotti emerges as a very, very likable guy, and it's fun just sort of liking him during the course of this movie. Our other film for today, The Art of Self-Defense, is, as I signaled earlier, totally different. This is the second feature directed by, written and directed by, Riley Stearns. And the most interesting thing about it is, well, two interesting things. Number one, the cast, Jesse Eisenberg, Alessandro Nivola, Imogen Poots, very, very fine, and they're all good in this movie. And secondly, the story. This is a very, very, as one critic, I'm not quoting myself here, I'm quoting somebody else, said, like any sort of good martial arts session, I guess, it keeps you off balance. And you never know quite what's coming next. The movie is basically a kind of a satire, and a satire above all else of what we might call toxic masculinity. And it's also a satire of the kind of paranoia that swirls through our modern, especially urban living. But it goes in directions that you just don't really expect. So what we have at the beginning of The Art of Self-Defense is a young man played by the very fine Jesse Eisenberg. The young man's name is Casey, and he is walking down the street. In fact, he is going out to get some more food for his little dachshund. for his little dog because he's run out of food, and he is attacked. He is mugged and viciously beaten. So, you know, we know that this movie, if you know anything about the movie, you know it's going to be sort of a comedy and sort of a satire and that sort of thing. So it's a little bit surprising that it starts out with this, our main character, getting really, really, really viciously mugged. So anyway, he then decides that he is going to learn something about self-defense because he feels so understandably helpless after this terrible incident. So he tries a couple of things. He goes to buy a gun, he finds out there's a waiting period, so he's got to wait a little while before he can actually put hands on the gun that he has bought. And he tries one or two other things that might help him with some self-defense, but at one point he walks into a martial arts establishment, a dojo, and there he meets the leader of the dojo, who calls himself Sensei, played by Alessandro Nivola. And this movie is very much a satire of toxic masculinity, and one of the very good things about this film is, number one, you never hear that phrase, toxic masculinity, being used, but another is that Alessandro Nivola does not play the Sensei as some kind of big, tough, macho guy. He's actually quite soft-spoken, but he still projects that aura of, I'm going to say it yet again, toxic masculinity, very, very persuasively. And the movie becomes very much about the relationship between Casey and Sensei, between the newcomer who just wants to learn how to defend himself a bit, and the Sensei who is very much into all things masculine. And before you know it, the Sensei is giving Casey all kinds of advice, like, why do you have a dachshund? You should have a German shepherd, some big tough dog, in other words, some masculine dog. Why are you learning French, and do you want to go visit France someday? How about a tough country like Germany? Learn German. So it's all this sort of thing, and some of this stuff is very amusing. Casey also gets to know Anna, who is the main woman at the dojo, and she is working her way. There's a whole lot of talk in this movie about the different levels of belts that you get, you know, from white belt all the way up to black belt, and she is someone who is working her way up this ladder, and she is not into toxic masculinity, but she is sort of, in certain respects, a sort of a female version of that. So that's sort of interesting as well. And she becomes not one of the main characters, but a very important character in the movie. Now, I said that the art of self-defense keeps you kind of off balance, and it really does. And one of the things that it does, which I think is particularly interesting, is to sort of alternate between lightness and darkness. It is a very dark comedy. I say it is definitely a comedy, but it's a very dark comedy. And all kinds of unexpected things keep happening, and sometimes they're violent things. The movie is not over-the-top violence. This is not some sort of a horror movie, but it is. It takes quite a number of very dark twists as it goes along, and it's fascinating to kind of feel yourself drawn back and forth between the kind of mordant satire, the kind of dark, sometimes extremely dark comedy of it, and sometimes the satire of things like male chauvinism that are not very pleasant and which the movie does a good job of skewering, but again, often in ways that, that are very surprising. I must also say that some of the comedy in the movie is verbal. There's some very witty dialogue here and there in the movie. Some of it is really very much visual. There are some sight gags, and certainly there's a whole lot of stuff that goes on with the various martial arts training techniques and training sessions and so forth. And there's also a certain, you know, the performances carry their own real charge because the acting tends to be very, very, very subtle in a lot of ways. Now, the art of self-defense, one of the more conventional things about it is that it sort of comes under the category of the sort of, it's about a nerd. Casey is, to use sort of, I guess it's an old-fashioned term nowadays, but he's very much a nerd. And he talks like a nerd, and he walks like a nerd, and he acts like a nerd. And these are some of the less original aspects of the movie, because we've seen this sort of thing before. And in fact, we've seen this wonderful actor, Jesse Eisenberg, do this sort of thing before. And this is where the movie is kind of at its most conventional, is that it's about the nerd who ultimately sort of, he wants to get his revenge. So, you know, and the in that respect, the movie is kind of conventional. But again, it keeps taking all of these twists and turns, which are very unexpected a lot of the time. And I have to say that Jesse Eisenberg especially manages these things very, very well. Yes, yeah, sometimes he's a little bit too much on the sort of the blank-faced, dull-talking nerd type. But sometimes he brings a sort of a special touch to that, which is very interesting. For me, Jesse Eisenberg will probably always be the great main character of The Social Network. And in a way, there's a certain sort of overlap between Casey and this movie and Mark Zuckerberg and The Social Network. But this film both plays up the nerd part of it a whole lot more emphatically. While at the same time taking things in very, very strange and interesting directions. And I rather like strange and interesting films. So I certainly recommend The Art of Self-Defense if you want to see a really offbeat kind of a dark comedy that goes in all sorts of directions that you didn't expect. I had a good time watching it. I was also kind of glad when it ended because I had sort of had enough. But if you want to see if this is possible, a memorable nerd, a memorable nevish, then The Art of Self-Defense is the movie that you don't have to defend yourself from. And that is my extremely disconnected story this week, Jill.
I think a memorable nevish, however, is a really interesting phrase, and we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Pavarotti and The Art of Self-Defense.